You are Locked On Celtics, your daily Celtics podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
And I'm so hyped right now. Anything's possible. Oh, my mama. Oh, my mama made it, man. Anything's possible.
Rainy days, jump shot, fade away. This the best Celtics podcast day to day. I get excited about it every night about it. A real C's fan wouldn't want to live their life without it. Banner 18 in the making, we gotta make it. Best squad in the East and still we can't get complacent. Most winning franchise, so the history's ancient. You could tell them other guys to go and plan a vacation. Yeah, Corrales, Packard, and Jay King. Locked on, trying to get the 18th ring. The most in-depth coverage that you ever gonna hear. Well respected in the city like Russell's career. It's Raining Jay. Millie.
Welcome back. This is the Locked On Celtics podcast, and we are back for the postseason.
What's up with y'all?
It feels like we haven't done one of these in forever. Normally, we are your daily. It's been so long. I can't even.
Damn, can you
talk
speak,
anymore.
Bro?
Cannot. And I haven't. I don't even have alcohol as an excuse. I just cannot speak right now. Normally, we are your daily podcast. We took Friday and Monday off, so here we're back. We're back now for a Tuesday podcast to set us up for the off season. A little bit of a look back, a little bit of a look forward, a little bit of a look at the Kyrie Irving rumors and all of that stuff. So why don't we do that? Let's set the table. If you're new and you don't know who we are, we're the Rain and Jays. I am John Corrales. I cover the Celtics for MassLive.com, joined by the kid, Jay King, who writes for The Athletic. And why don't we start? Let's just kind of go back to the end and the
go back to the devastating end.
In the wake of watching Kawhi Leonard hit that insane buzzer beater, has there ever been a more dramatic buzzer beater in basketball? I mean, that was.
I'm not sure I've ever seen a ball hang on the rim like that. And never mind game seven buzzer beater, like walk off. Like, I'm not sure I've ever seen a ball hit the rim on the wrong side of the rim, bounce off, look like it was going to roll off the other side of the rim, come back, somehow nestle itself inside the rim. It was absurd. And shout out to Marcus All, though, for comforting Joel Embiid in his time of need.
Yeah, true. Embiid was very distraught after the game. But that buzzer beater, first of all, there's never been a Game 7 buzzer beater in the NBA. So that's number one. Number two, for it to bounce four times, the first one the way
it did. It was absurd.
It was.
And the key figures like Kawhi and Embiid, who had guarded him, they were both standing like 5 feet out of bounds, which is the best part. Like
waiting.
They were watching it from behind the backboard, like just waiting for like 12 seconds as it bounced out the rim.
Oh my God. It just bounce, like everything goes quiet because everybody takes their gasp, like, and then you wait, like, come on, do it. The whole thing went wild. It was nuts. So in the wake of Kawhi doing that and scoring like, what was it, 15 points in the fourth quarter to lead his team to a win, and Kevin Durant goes down, but Steph Curry is scoring 33 in the second half of a game four. CJ McCollum going off, all of these stars going off, and we have Kyrie Irving, who over the course of four games could not get anything going, shooting like 30% over the course of four games. My take afterwards was that here's a guy who was invited this spotlight on him, and he couldn't perform. He just couldn't get it done in that moment. And you got to credit a lot of it to the Milwaukee Bucks defense, but like at the same time, if you're going to invite this type of scrutiny, if you're going to invite this type of spotlight, if you're going to be out there saying, we're going to be okay, why is that? Because I'm here, then you better be ready to perform. And now we're watching stars perform over and over again, and the one guy who tried to sell himself as a star at that level is sitting here the subject of rumors of where he's going to go because his season is over.
Yeah, I mean, to me, everyone has scrutiny in the playoffs. Kyrie's was heightened because of what the Celtics did without him and the expectations they had before he came back healthy, the expectations of what they could be with him healthy. Obviously, he wasn't great. Obviously, that was one of the worst four-game stretches he's had with the Celtics. Maybe the very worst four-game stretch he's had with the Celtics. When you see, like, other guys can get away with a bad game or two. And Kyrie could have gotten away with a bad game or two. He was fantastic in game one of the Bucks series. Like, I don't know. To me, like, this whole Celtics season almost seems snake-bitten from the start. And I don't think Kyrie was blameless throughout it, but I do think he's catching too much of the blame for it. And I think there were a lot of players on that team who thought they wanted or who thought they deserved more touches and who thought they deserved more minutes and who thought they deserved a greater role. And I thought the whole mix of it intensified the pressures on everyone and made it a tough work environment for everyone. And I think Kyrie, because of who he is and because he wanted to take on a leadership role and maybe wasn't and certainly wasn't totally prepared for everything that brought. But I thought to some extent he took an unfair hit for just how much of the blame he took. Nobody was good in that series. The bench got its ass kicked by George Hill and Pat Connaughton. And obviously Kyrie was bad. Like Kyrie wasn't even close to what Kyrie is supposed to be. And Kyrie, by what he said, by who he is in general, has a lot of pressure on his shoulders. But from the start, the formula was just mixed up and they never got it right. And it was on everybody. It wasn't just on him. He could have done things differently. I think everybody on that roster could have done things differently. Everybody on the coaching staff, everybody in the front office could have done things differently from the start to alleviate some of the pressures and some of the disjointed nature that they went through. But Kyrie, by the end, to me, took too much heat. And he deserved some. He certainly deserved some heat. Like he was, it almost seemed like he checked out early, but they all did. It wasn't like he was like he was 2 for 9 at some point in game 5, and the rest of the team was like 2 for 20 or like 3 for 20 or whatever it was. Like he was shit. They were all shit. and to me, he's taken too much heat almost since it.
So I agree with you that he's taking. And
it's Kyrie, and so he deserves a heat, and so it's always going to fall on him. And he wanted that. That's what he wanted.
That's exactly my point. He's taking an unfair amount of the heat. Yes, if you really watch those games closely, he was passing the ball. He was making a lot of the right plays often, not all the time, but often. He was for most of the time trying to get in there and rebound. He was also doing bad things defensively. He was doing inexplicable things defensively. Why he would call for certain switches on Giannis. Why he would run down the center of the court when Giannis was bringing the ball up when there was a defender there and completely leave his guy. I forget who it was, but it was a shooter wide open. Like he doing some real bizarre things defensively. But the shots that he took were generally makeable shots that he missed. And for 4 straight games, he missed them. That happens. And I agree that there's a lot of blame to go around. And this is not all Kyrie's fault. But Kyrie asked for this. He sold us a bill of goods that all of the things that were happening during the regular season were just because it was the regular season. And when the playoffs would come around, they'd be different. And they were a little bit different in the Pacers series. Things came together. They were different in game one against the Bucks. I think game one was a combination of things. Partly the Bucks. Somebody made the comment. So this is not my original thought, but going from a knuckleball pitcher to a fastball pitcher, and just the Bucks going from the Detroit Pistons who sucked to the Celtics who were prepared.
What type of fastball pitcher were the Celtics? Were they throwing gopher balls or what? No,
but what I'm saying is, like, in game one,
yeah,
like they went from a four-game kind of blah series against the nothing Pistons, who were bad enough as it was, but Blake Griffin was not himself, not 100%, to the Celtics who were raring to go. And so you have that thing where the Bucks didn't come out like as forceful as they needed to come out. And the other thing was they played their normal defense, and the Celtics did everything like they were supposed to do and picked it apart. And it wasn't until the Bucks made their adjustment in game two that the Celtics completely fell apart. And the real blame is that the Bucks adjustments in game two to invite a lot, to switch more often and invite that individual one-on-one play, the isolation play, that's where the series really shook. Because once the Celtics get sucked into isolation play this past season, it's all over. They love.
They were forever willing to take the easy way out.
That's exactly it. That's exactly.
That's
it.
Like that should that's go on their exactly gravestone. That's always willing to take the easy way out.
That's the perfect way to put it, Jay. I've in all of this in an entire season. That's the perfect summation of it. It took after the season to be over to get that. It's exactly true. And when I asked Brad Stevens about, the Bucks gave up a ton of corner threes, like a ton. And I was asking him about, like, you're getting these, and yes, theoretically, a corner three is a good shot. Like, obviously, so much of NBA offense is geared towards corner threes, but sometimes when you get them so early, there's an opportunity to drive and do more than just settle for the three. And again, I understand that sometimes that corner three, it's just irresistible. You work your entire offense, you go, oh, great, we got a corner three. But when it's so available, when they're inviting you to shoot them and you're not shooting them well, then do something else. And I saw the Warriors with Jonas Jerebko and Sean Livingston, and obviously Curry was on the floor, but Curry gave it up. So Kyrie in that situation would be giving it up, and off to a guy in the corner, maybe it would have been Jaylen Brown in the Jonas Jerebko role. Jerebko drove and drew defenders, and then here comes Livingston right down the lane, easy dump off and a dunk. Now, the Celtics clearly, obviously, didn't do any of that stuff. They settled for those jumpers, the threes all over the place. So there's a ton of that blame to go around. But I'll go back to my original point. Kyrie's the guy that said, because I'm here. Kyrie's the guy that said, I want this. This is what I signed up for. This is, like, he built himself up. He turned the spotlights on himself. He trained them on himself. He wanted all of this, and when it came time to perform, he didn't. And that's okay. It happens. It's happened to other stars in the past. We've seen it happen. How do you react from that? How does he take this? Like, part one is, yeah, Kyrie gets a ton of the blame, more blame than he probably should, because he asked for this, so he invited this, and there's that initial reaction. Part two is, what does he do with this? Does he get humbled at all and say, does he go the Paul Pierce route where after that bullshit performance against the Indiana Pacers and that where he goes up and has that the jaw wrap and he has a falling out with Doc Rivers? Does he sit back and say, you know what? It's not going to work with me doing it like this. I've got to change my approach just a little bit without losing the edge, without losing the confidence, without losing all of that. You know, obviously Paul Pierce is a big enough star. Like he didn't lose any of that stuff, but still worked within the team construct. Like, does Kyrie take any kind of step like that moving forward? That's what I want to know now moving forward. does he do that? And of course, does he do that with the Boston Celtics?
Let's talk about it after the break, baby.
Oh, man, that was an alley-oop, and you slammed it home, Jay. I love it. That's team chemistry. All right. We'll be right back in the Locked On Celtics podcast. Rumors galore with Kyrie Irving, just all over the place. Listening to Windhorst and Jackie McMullen on the Hoop Collective podcast, they're like, oh, yeah, the door's open for him to go to L.A. Then Stephen A. Smith says, I got a text from Kyrie's family. He said, no way in hell he's going to L.A. He's going to go to New York. And then I hear something today. I think it's Gilroy. He's talking on EEI saying that something about Kyrie's going through long-term like home improvements in Boston. So that doesn't sound like a guy who's leaving at all. Like, we're all over the place with Kyrie rumors. So with that, I ask you, Jay, what do you make of all of this?
I'll say what I've said to all my friends who have asked me and all my cousins who have asked me. And all the strangers who have asked me, I don't know. I do think, obviously, this was a trying season for everyone involved in the Celtics organization, from Danny Ainge to Brad Stevens to basically any player on the roster, maybe every single player on the roster. It was a trying season. They didn't get what they wanted from it. I do think that Kyrie has at least some appreciation for the Celtics organization. Obviously, he committed to them before the season verbally. Obviously, he respects Danny Ainge. Obviously, he certainly likes Brad Stevens as a person. I think Brad would be the first one to tell you that he didn't maximize his team as a coach. I don't know how much that weighs on Kyrie. I don't know how much that weighs on Brad. I don't know how much that weighs on anybody involved. Would it shock me if Kyrie stays in Boston? No. Would it shock me if he leaves for New York or Brooklyn or LA? No. Like, I am going into this summer thinking anything could happen. And it's kind of fascinating because a year ago this time, the Sixers and Celtics playoff series had just ended. And Brett Brown kind of said, yeah, the Eastern Conference is going to run through those guys for the next 10 years or whatever it was he said. I don't remember the exact quote. But to think back 1 year later and to think how much uncertainty there is now in Boston with Al Horford's player option, with Kyrie's free agency, with everything. And, you know, if Kyrie leaves, what do they do? Do they pivot to a youth movement? Does that change Al Horford's mind? Do they still go after Anthony Davis, or do they think without Kyrie, we can't convince him to re-sign? Like, there are so many moving variables this summer that it's hard to keep track of. It's hard to predict what the hell is going to happen because it's like a Jenga tower. And if you pull out one piece, then it's going to impact everything else. And so I am fascinated to see this summer. To me, beyond even like the summers when they signed Al Horford and the summer when they signed Gordon Hayward, this is the most interesting one because this is the one when the direction could change. And I don't know what would be the deciding point for the change of direction, whether if Kyrie leaves, they would pivot. Or like if Kyrie and Al both leave, they'd have to pivot, or what it would take for the Celtics to pivot. But I do think this is the first time in years when a pivot is a realistic option. And I don't know how realistic it is because I don't know what the odds are of Kyrie coming back. And I don't know what the odds are of Al coming back. I think Al is more of a probability to return than Kyrie, but the odds of a pivot make everything so interesting to me. And then on top of that, there's a draft lottery, which is tomorrow or today when you're listening to this podcast. And that could change everything, too.
That could have such a significant impact because if it depends on who wins the lottery. And if there's a team that is willing to trade that pick to New Orleans, then the Anthony Davis thing could go south and then something else. But the Celtics have to go somewhere else, even if Kyrie does come back. So there are a lot of different things going on here. One thing I want to mention here, if Kyrie leaves, that doesn't just open up $21.3 million for the Celtics to spend somewhere else. They are over the cap, over the tax, and Kyrie leaving, it would take Kyrie leaving and Al Horford leaving and Aaron Baines leaving, and then the Celtics to renounce all of their free agents before they get any meaningful cap space. Like they're really in a tough spot. Financially, I think it's better for them to sign Kyrie. And
it's better for them on every level, I think, to sign Kyrie.
Right. But there is some question about how Kyrie has worn on the franchise a little
bit. But I think a lot of that goes back to how trying this season was for everyone.
Sure.
And it wasn't just Kyrie. Like Kyrie during his first year, nothing went wrong. Like they won 16 games at the start and everyone loved him. He loved it so much that he decided to verbally commit. Like,
right. But that was back at a different time where,
it was different, but I do think things will be different next year too. No matter what happens, like they're not going to bring back all the guys who want all the touches and all the minutes and they won't have the same roster. I do think.
No, absolutely not.
And if he comes back, especially, they'll chase hard after Anthony Davis. They may be the favorites to get him. If they do get him, the roster will be diminished depth wise, and that's probably a good thing. And so there won't be the same pressures and the same, like a lot of it will be very different.
Oh, absolutely.
And I think switching up the formula would help everyone from Brad to Kyrie to everyone involved. And so I do think it's worth for the fans, because I've heard a lot of fans who are sick of Kyrie. And I get it. I get why he grated on people and he became such a divisive figure this year. But also, like, when things were a little bit different last year, he was a perfect fit. And he helped everything. And he loved it. And everyone liked him. And it was very easy from the start. Like there was no adjustment period to having Kyrie on the roster. Yeah. So I think it's important too to note that and to realize that this past year there were like so many dynamics in play that just won't be there all the time. And that I think Danny Ainge and Brad Stevens will work very hard to eliminate in the future, assuming Kyrie does come back, assuming they have some of the similar players on the roster. Like it just won't be the same. I think things will be easier on everyone no matter what, whether Kyrie comes back or not.
I think there are two things that'll definitely be different that will help. Let's assume right now for a moment that Kyrie comes back and they don't land Anthony Davis, just for the sake of this discussion. That the two things that are different, one will be that Gordon Hayward will come back, presumably 100% healthy. He'll have the full summer to not worry about his ankle so much as he would just to have that consequence-free 5-on-5 to work through the last remaining hurdles of his recovery. He got close to 100%, I think, by the end of the season, but no one's going to sit there and say he was 100%. So that...
And he was a zero against the Bucks.
He was. He was absolutely. That was just terrible. Aside from, like, everybody was okay in game one. Nobody was really particularly great after that. But I think he comes back more of himself. And there's just beginning of next season, assuming nothing happens to him over the summer, like, that's it. Enough with the ankle. No more talk. No more recovery. He'll have, like, maybe one day of talking about it at media day. That's it. So that's number one, because that hurt like Jaylen Brown at the beginning, that hurt Jason Tatum in the beginning, like, that dynamic of waiting for Hayward to come around. And I do not change any of what I said. They needed to do that way. I think it worked as best as it possibly could. We saw by the end of the season that he was playing his best basketball, despite not being good in that Bucks series. He was playing his best basketball right at the end. So that's number one. That dynamic doesn't exist. The other thing that changes is Terry Rozier is gone. And that, I think he had he just couldn't handle that situation. And not to put it all on him, but I think it's a major factor of he was the first guy at the end of the season who was just really like, thank God this bullshit is over. I am done. So I think those two things alone would change the dynamic in the locker room.
Yeah, I'm just like, there's so much going on.
Oh, yeah.
I do think if Gordon was healthy from the start of last season, everything changes. The hierarchy is different. Guys realize, like, okay, he's damn good. Like, if he's taking my minutes, that's cool. And so that was a problem all season long. When if he's healthy, that's just not a problem at all. Whatever. He just fits right in. And he's such a good passer. He's such a good playmaker. Like, he makes the right play. Everything makes a lot more sense if Gordon Hayward's healthy. So, yes, if he gets healthy, agreed. The Terry Rozier thing, I think Terry was kind of right when he said, I sacrificed more than anyone. I do think, like, when you look at what he was in the playoffs the year before and then what he came back and was during a contract year, like, he had a no good year. And I do think he could have handled it so much better. And I do think a lot of these guys, when they look back on it, when their careers, like, when they've grown up and when they've become veterans, and they're going to look back at that season like, why the hell didn't I just buy in?
Right.
Why the hell didn't I just decide
the simplest thing
to just buy into what we were trying to do? It would have been better for me. It would have been better for the team. It would have been better for every single person involved. But I think it's hard to look past the fact that you're losing touches and you're losing minutes and you're losing opportunities in a contract year. And that, like, that's something that's very difficult to deal with. And I think as someone who's been in work environments, and I think there are a lot of adults listening to this podcast who will agree, work environments can just be weird. And they can bring different pressures on you that you don't even think about otherwise, and that you would never care about otherwise. Like things about, like, why is this guy getting treated differently than I am? And it's like, it doesn't really matter. Like, it really doesn't matter. But because it's a work environment, like, there are just thoughts about that come into your head. And I think the Celtics dealt with a lot of that this year. And I think a lot of them will be disappointed with the way the season ended. And like Brad Stevens said, learn a lot from what happened. I think Terry's one of those guys. I think Jason Tatum's one of those guys. Jaylen Brown, I think he bought in early. He was one of the first to buy in to me. And like a couple months in the season, he was terrible for the first couple months. And then he kind of realized, like, I need to put aside individual BS and just be who I am and help however I can. And I thought he at least tried to do that. Not everybody tried all the time or tried their best all the time or could put aside all the other BS all the time. And so, yeah, there are just a lot of factors that will be different if Kyrie comes back for him. And I think the Celtics, while recruiting him again over the summer, need to stress that upon him. Like, this shit will be different.
Right.
Whether it's the roster, whether it's the mentality, whether it's Anthony Davis by your side, like, shit will be different next year. It won't be all the same BS that the Celtics dealt with all year.
No, there definitely are lessons that are going to be learned. Brad Stevens, I think, is among the most important people to learn a lesson here, and how I've said it before, when Kyrie said, Brad's never coached a guy like me, like, he didn't know how right he was, and Brad Stevens has to take an accounting of what did I let Kyrie do, and how do I manage that? How do we work together? How does this whole thing work? Now, the other thing that is going to be significantly different, theoretically, if Kyrie comes back, is the specter of a free agency with Kyrie is not going to be around. Provided, of course, that he doesn't sign like a 1+1 and make us go through all of this again. If Kyrie signs a 5-year deal and sticks around in Boston, then the entire... like, none of that bullshit in the middle of the season of rumors about Kyrie's free agency and ask me July 1st and all of that stuff. Like, all of that stuff goes away if he comes back. So that changes, I think, a lot of the dynamic of how the Celtics and Kyrie coexist. And there might have been some eggshells around with Kyrie, because I think Danny Ainge understands, like, this is the guy. This is kind of like, we need this guy to execute the entire plan, because the plan is Kyrie, Gordon, and then add Anthony Davis, and there you go. There's your championship contender.
And we're talking all about, like, intangible stuff right now. I think there are some basketball things, too, that have to change. I think if we're talking about Kyrie specifically, Kyrie has to take more threes. Kyrie has to cut out some of the early shot clock twos. Kyrie has to be more willing to get in the paint, and it's weird to say because it's Kyrie, but, like, he has to be better about beating switches. He can't let Brook Lopez hinder him. Yeah. Cannot do it. And the Celtics have to be better as a team at doing that. They have to find a way, whether it's changing the offense or whatever, to get to the paint, draw more free throws. They need to be more diligent about hunting the right shots, and that starts with Brad Stevens, I think, but it includes Kyrie, it includes Jason Tatum, it includes everybody. They just need to be better at hunting the right shots. And that was a huge deal for them all season. And so it's not just like things come back, like chemistry changes, mentalities are different, but like actual basketball things have to change too. And I think Kyrie should look at the other great guards in the league. Like, it wouldn't be hard for him to average 10 three-point attempts per game. Maybe he'll never get to the free throw line much, but he can move some of those long twos to threes. And if he does that, all of a sudden they're different. I think Isaiah, his last year in Boston, averaged like 10 threes a game. And when you're shooting pull-up threes, like, yes, you're going to miss some of them, but it just puts so much stress on a defense. And it just changes the way people guard you. And I do think he has to keep that in mind as he works out over the summer. And that's one of the things that he should change, too, on top of the mentality stuff and the mindset stuff that we've talked about.
Yeah, I think the reason why all we talk about is the mindset stuff is because that was the biggest problem this past season, that it's all mindset. It's all – so much of it was mental. Very little of it was the actual basketball, because I think if you fix some of the mental things that were problematic, the basketball stuff takes care of itself. And some of the shots that those guys would rely on, they wouldn't be taken. And yeah, there are definitely basketball things that need to change with Kyrie, with everybody. I think except for like Al Horford, maybe, I think, There's going to be more of an emphasis of getting to the rim. They've got to figure out a way to be a much more attacking team and not, like, just not settle, like you said, for the easy way out and just take the jumpers. Like, yeah, I get what you're saying with Kyrie taking the threes. I want to see these guys getting to the rim. I want to see ball movement.
Yeah, that's the most important part of it. But with Kyrie, because Kyrie's never going to be a big free throw guy. Like, I don't think that's going to be in him, but it would be easy for him to switch from 6 or 7 threes a game to 10 threes a game.
Sure, but like, aren't all the best players here, though, big free throw guys? Like, aren't they all getting a fair share at the line?
Curry gets a few more, but like, some of those guys aren't huge three-point guy or free throw guys, but like all the fringe stuff, when you're that good, all the fringe stuff matters. Like when you look at Paul George and the steps forward he took in OKC this year, a lot of it was just like he took a lot more threes. And that's a big change sometimes for guys. Like you can get sometimes easier looks out there because guys aren't guarding you so close, so far from the basket. It changes the way people guard everybody else on your team when you're more willing to take those. So I just think that's the easiest change for him to make. And I'm not harping on it as the only change the Celtics need to make. Obviously, getting to the rim, getting to the free throw line, getting the space to do that, however possible, whether it's through Brad Stevens changing the offense a little bit, or, you know, Kyrie putting more of an emphasis on it, or Gordon Hayward just getting healthy, Jason Tatum getting stronger, Jaylen Brown becoming more of an emphasis, whatever the case may be. Anthony Davis coming into town and just catching dunks on everybody. Like, there are a lot of different ways they can do that, but that's obviously number one. But I do think that the 3-point attempt rate is something that could change for them and help them out too.
Why don't we take a break and we'll talk about some of these other things that could happen in the offseason moving forward and see how this team might come together, all that stuff. We'll take a break. We'll be right back here on the Locked On Celtics podcast. All the focus is on Kyrie, but there are other people who could be gone. And Al Horford was, I want to say, surprisingly non-committal after Game 5, but so many indications out there, so many stories that he wants to stay. I can't imagine that he wants to leave, but I think he's leaving. He left himself the out just in case everything falls apart. He's like, you know what, I'm not going to hang around and just be part of a rebuilding team for too long. I don't think he has to worry about that necessarily. I don't think Danny Ainge is ready to rip this thing down. I think the worst case scenario is that you go, if Kyrie leaves and you don't make a trade for Anthony Davis, then you go with the young guys. We talked about this. There's two concurrent paths that we're running, that you have the Kyrie Gordon Horford timeline, and then you have the Jalen Jason timeline. Well, if Kyrie leaves and you have to do the Jalen Jason timeline, you could work with that. But anyway, Al Horford has a $30 million player option. I don't think he exercises that no matter what. Either opts out and leaves, or he opts out and signs a longer-term deal that gets him more money over the course of 3, 4, 5 years, however long it is. And I've talked about this before, that starts at a lower number and ends up being a longer-term deal. So something like, if they wanted to spread it out to 5 years, now that the under or the over 36 rule became the over 38 rule, which is a complicated cap mechanism that changes the way the salary is calculated, but all he has to be is under 38 in the last year of his contract, which he will be now. So the Celtics could theoretically spread this out to 5 years. And if they did that and they gave him like $90 million, they could start a contract next year that is somewhere around $17 million and be, I think that helps them out a lot financially, helps Al Horford out. I think something in that range is the most likely scenario with Al Horford.
I guess we'll see. He hasn't said much about it. I do wonder how much this season scarred him, from the sense that, like, before this season, everything was just smooth riding in Boston. And obviously this season it wasn't. And how much does that change his thinking about the organization? How much does that change his thinking about the future? How much does that change his thinking about staying? And I don't know the answers to those questions. Obviously, this was like almost the worst case scenario for this year, barring like major, major injury. And they still won 49 games. They still got to the second round. They were still pretty good. but he's 33 now, and he's going to want more than pretty good. So I do think that the Celtics may have to sell him on the sense that things will be different. And I'm just guessing, like, there's no inside information here, but I just wonder how much this season will weigh on guys that were involved in this season, and how much that will impact the decision making from Kyrie to Al to Aaron Baines, who has a player option, to all the other guys. Like, it was just a weird, funky season that, like I said, seemed snake bitten from the start. And I am interested to see, like, what the fallout of it is.
Yeah, this really was a worst case scenario, wasn't it?
Yeah, it's hard to imagine them winning less than 49 games.
Yeah.
Like, with the group they had, it was almost, and the health they had, they were pretty healthy. It was almost impossible.
Yeah. I guess Al Horford has a decision to make in that. I mean, obviously he has a decision to make. He could opt out. So, but the decision is, how much confidence has he lost in the franchise? So I can see your point that they have to sell him again. I think the 1 year hiccup is, it can be sold as a hiccup to him. And you say, this was a unique mix of problems that aren't going to return.
And the players involved know better than anyone what they dealt with all season and what would be different.
Right. And it really depends on, like, Al Horford was there with Kyrie the whole year. There are a lot of people guessing about Kyrie, his leadership, the impact on the team. Marcus Smart flat out called it bullshit, but those guys know that we don't. And no one in there is really, really talking about it. I saw some things start to leak out, but it was from earlier in the season, and I think you could tell some of the frustrated guys, they're expressing some of that frustration earlier in the season, that some people had kind of sitting in their notebooks for a while. But if Al Horford really thinks that Kyrie Irving was the problem, and Kyrie comes back, Al Horford would be the guy that sat there and said, well, this isn't worth it to me. I'm not going to go through another season of this. If he really thinks that that's the problem, that would be an indicator, wouldn't it? Like, Kyrie comes back and he says, no, I'm not. I'm going somewhere else. I'll deal with it somewhere else. Like, that, I feel like, would be the move. I don't know that that's the case. I think at, what's he going to be, 33 now?
He is 33.
So, I don't know that when you're still as good as Al Horford is, that you want to start bouncing around the league and taking your family and going all over the place chasing a ring. Like, where do you go? Do you go to the Warriors on a shorter term deal and get your ring? Like, what do you do in that situation? Or do you just trust that Danny Ainge and Brad Stevens can fix this because you've got a relationship with those guys. You've seen it at work. And you say, all right, some of these things are going to change. Attitude, talk to Brad. Offense things might change, whatever. You just roll the dice and you say, I'm gonna have 4 or 5 years left. I'm here. I'm comfortable. I trust these guys. Let's go with it. I don't know. I can see why Al Horford might say, screw it, I'm out. But I just feel like he's just much more likely to just see this through.
We will see. We will see soon.
You say that in a way that makes me feel like you know something.
I know this offseason is going to be interesting. That's all I know. That's all I got. One way or another, this shit will be interesting.
Yeah, Aaron Baines also has a player option. Do you have any feeling on Baines deciding to come back for $5.4 million?
We will see. We will see. I don't know, man. I I am trying to gauge how much this season weighed on people and how much it changed their minds. Like Baines a year ago was saying, comparing the Celtics team to his Spurs team that won the championship.
Yeah.
Like, we lost a game 7. We can come back and use the same motivation. And it's like, yeah, that didn't work out, pal. And then he loses playing time in the playoff series, fluctuation with the minutes. So I think he's got something to think about. I think everybody's got something to think about. I think everybody has to weigh, like, what's real from this season, what will continue from this season, and what will change about this season. And that's all I got. That's all I got.
No, it's true. That's fair. It's just wild to think that one season can change so much about what was such an obvious upward trajectory.
Yeah, the Celtics, their future seemed inevitable.
Yeah,
it did.
It really did.
And now you just don't know.
You really don't. Now all of a sudden, things can go significantly different. And
anything is in play. shit, they could still get the second pick.
They could. Can you imagine if all of a sudden they get the second pick? It's, I mean, like, that changes a lot. That would obviously, I don't want to go down too crazy a road there, but like, if the number one pick goes to a team that doesn't want to trade it, like Atlanta, I don't think Atlanta's looking to move the number one pick. If they get it, they're happily add Zion to that mix.
Yep.
If the Celtics get somehow crazy, like 2, 3, or 4, then who knows what happens then? Because then who know, maybe you don't have to attach both Jalen or Jason to a Davis trade. I don't know. So many possibilities here. I guess we'll see.
We will see.
Draft lottery is Tuesday night, and we're going to figure out a lot. Like, as if things weren't crazy enough, the draft lottery can be the lucky break or the unlucky break that changes the entire future of the Boston Celtics. Like, a year ago today, we're sitting here riding high, thinking about how awesome it was going to be after a Game 7, a tough Game 7 loss. We're like, but we're going to add Kyrie next year. We're going to add Gordon Hayward. And oh my God. And now here we are talking about the draft lottery could significantly change what the Celtics do and their entire future. So it's wild. We'll talk about it afterwards. We're happy to be back. We're going to be
back. We back.
We're back, baby. And we'll be back on the Daily Grind Monday through Friday. So all of you new listeners.
Yeah, come holler at your boys.
That's right. And subscribe on the new Himalaya podcast app or wherever podcasts exist. You can even get into your car and tell your smart device to play podcast Locked On Celtics. Do that. Or if you're a regular listener, go ahead and give us that 5-star rating, a good review as well. Share the podcast. Tell them all we're back, baby.
We're back.
Locked On Celtics podcast. Here on the Locked On Podcast Network.
And we back. Yeah, Corrales, Packard, and J. King.